have Cormac Moore, historian in residence with the North Central area of the Dublin City Libraries. Good afternoon, Cormac. How are you?
Good afternoon, Noel. Very good.
Okay,
thanks.
Just what we're doing is we're giving little snippets of what you're going to be doing in the libraries. So we'll go over the dates again. You're in Raheny Library on Monday the 12th, the 19th, the 26th, and this. At 6:30, that's
Yeah, exactly.
Well, obviously the 12th is gone, so the 19th, that's next Monday, and the Monday afterwards you're there. Then you're in Coolock Library on the 13th, the 20th, and the 27th of June. Well, the 13th is gone, so we'll be leaving them dates out. I'll just go over it again and leave out the first date, okay? Raheny Library, the 19th and the 26th, 6:30. Then Coolock Library, the 20th and the 27th at 6:30. And then the Marina Library, the 21st and the 28th at 6:30. And then finally in Donaghmede, the 22nd and the 29th at 6:30. They're all around 6:30. As I say, just little bits of what are we going to be talking to over the next few weeks with me. Now, the first thing we're going to look back at is 1917 and the by-election. And Sinn Féin seemed to be doing well across the board course of all these elections, weren't they?
Well, yeah, their first kind of big election test was the North Roscommon by-election in February 1917. Now, the candidate, Count Plunkett, he wasn't a Sinn Féin candidate as such. He was a kind of a radical nationalist candidate, which was conveniently dubbed Sinn Féin. So Sinn Féin did support him, the Irish Volunteers supported him. And that was their first big test, and they won the election. You know, they defeated the Irish Party, and that would be the first of four by-election victories in a row in 1917, mm-hmm. Which saw the electoral power of Sinn Féin increase dramatically. And it actually, they'd never done politics before. Before the 1916 rising, they weren't a very successful party. They actually found themselves out to be quite good at it, you know.
What sort of formation was the government around that era to give you an idea of who they had beaten? How many parties were there? Were there any individual people going in like there are today?
Well, yeah, but the Ireland was part of the Union, so the Irish seats were in Westminster, mm-hmm. since 1801. So the Irish Party was the dominant. The two main parties in Ireland, the island of Ireland, were the Irish Parliamentary Party, the Home Rule Party, and the Unionists, mainly in Ulster, but also some in Dublin, in mm-hmm. Trinity College and some other places. So they were the two big parties, and the biggest party by far was the Irish Parliamentary Party, the Home Rule Party, before Sinn Féin's victory in 1918.
Okay, and then it carried on. So, the reorganisation of the Irish Volunteers and Sinn Féin, that's all part of it as well, from 17 to 18.
Well, a lot of people kind of consider that the lull. There was a lull between the Easter Rising in 1916 and the War of Independence starting in 1919. But there was a lot of activity underground. You know, it did see a growing dissent with the Irish Party and a growing support for Sinn Féin and the Irish Volunteers. They reorganised, they increased their numbers, both the Irish Volunteers and Sinn Féin. And by 1919, with all that had gone on the 2 years previous to that, they were quite a strong position numbers wise and mm-hmm. support wise.
And it's just obviously a countrywide thing, campaigning all over the country. It wouldn't be like it is now with social media and television and all that sort of carry on. So a lot of travelling.
Well, yes, of course, but obviously, even today, you can, campaigns are run underground as well, so obviously back then there was no social media, but it was newspapers, and Sinn Féin were very good at propaganda and publicity. For example, in the South Longford by-election, the Archbishop of Dublin, William Walsh, he came out against the Irish Party the night before the actual election, saying that they were a party of partition, they were responsible for dividing the country, the Home Rule Party were. So Sinn Féin spent up all night, printing leaflets, distributing, and that was actually probably the key difference, because mm-hmm. Sinn Féin only won that by-election by 37 votes, okay. And they probably would not have done, if it was not for the intervention and their publicity of that intervention by Archbishop Walsh.
And the influence of the church, of course.
Exactly. Well, see, the church supporting, and key members of the church started to support Sinn Féin. They made them respectable, they made them politically respectable and okay to support. They weren't no longer considered these radical nationalists, these men of violence. Mm. They were considered a constitutional party, as much as Parnell or the Land League would have been.
Okay. One guy that was pretty prominent was Thomas Ashe. Tell me a little bit about him. That was in 2017.
1917, yes. It was the 100th anniversary of his death. Thomas Ashe led the kind of only successful military engagement of the Easter Rising, the Battle of Ashbourne. He was considered a very charismatic man, a brilliant speaker. He was as famous as De Valera was. They were the two kind of probably most prominent leaders left from the rising that weren't executed. Once he got released, he started giving a lot of seditious speeches, and he was very active in reorganising the Irish Volunteers. He was president of the IRB. He was arrested and put into Mountjoy prison. Because he didn't go by their rules, he was put on certain rations, he wasn't allowed reading material, so he went on hunger strike and was soon followed by some of his colleagues. So what the British did, and they did it with a lot of suffragists at the times, was this very horrible practice of force feeding people that went on hunger strike. Mm-hmm. And what that involved was that they would strap people to a chair, their arms and legs, strap them. They would get this pipe, a gullet, and they would stick it into your mouth or your nose and pump food down to your stomach. They did that in Mountjoy prison, and there was only four pumps for 40 prisoners. They weren't sterilised, really. And a person who administered this procedure had no experience in doing so. So on the 25th of September, Thomas Ash was force-fed, and it fatally damaged his lungs. And the autopsy report showed that there was scratching marks all over his mouth, his chin, his body. He died that night in the Mater Hospital. So there was a huge outpouring of grief and mourning for his death. This is a prominent, member of the nationalist movement, and he was also a very pious man, a very religious man, and so he had big support amongst the Catholic Church. They say that actually his funeral had a far greater attendance than Parnell's in 1891. Such was the outpouring of emotion. Okay. But what that did was it was a very striking moment. It was another factor in helping sound the death knell of the Irish Party. It further increased the support of the Sinn Féin movement and the Irish and the Irish Volunteers. He was a significant loss, though, because he was considered a potential leader of the movement.
Okay, and was there a lot of prisoners that died like that, would you know?
Not that many died now that way, but there was quite a few on the hunger strikes.
Yeah.
And ridiculously, from the British administration's point of view, they never, even when there was just when he died and there was this absolute outpouring of emotion and mourning towards his death, they still continued that practice for a few days afterwards.
Yeah, I know. I wouldn't know anything about, the actual medical side of it, but it sounds like the people that he actually drowned, it was like a form of waterboarding in a sense,
Well, it's just the way they administered it, it was just...
Yeah, horrible.
Putting a pipe down your lungs or your stomach, or your through your mouth or your nose. It was I don't think it was waterboarding and such. I think it's more actually... doing damage to your body,
Horrible,
exactly.
Horrible.
It sounded horrific. The
reaction to it, as you say, strengthened the leadership of Sinn Féin as well.
Exactly, yeah.
Now, coming up to the First World War, what impact, if any, did the war have on politics and with people? I know a lot of young men went off to fight and volunteered, and that caused a lot of friction. At home here, I know that had that impact, and because a lot of them did it because if anything happened to them, the wives got a pension.
Yeah, it was just,
or
just
they were getting away.
Economic considerations.
It was purely economics. But any other impact that the war had on politics and stuff like that?
Yeah, absolutely. The war, was becoming more and more unpopular the longer it went on. There were a lot of deaths. There was 40,000. It's estimated there's anywhere between 35,000 and 40,000 Irish people died in the war. 200,000 went off to fight. Many came back wounded. There's a big list of casualties with horrible illnesses, horrible wounds, psychological wounds as well. There was a huge level of that. The war was becoming less and less popular. It also affected the economics of Ireland. There was a big food shortage. Prices were increasing. So people were in abject poverty. There was a lot of protests. There was a lot of unrest caused by the war ongoing and the effects of the war. The Irish Party supported the war and were seen as the main supporters of the war. So they started to lose support. Even before the Rising, they were losing support because of the war and the war effort. So it definitely did help Sinn Féin, the fact that the longer the war went on, and it did not help the Irish Party.
Okay, and I suppose on top of that, I was just saying programmes. I know I made a mistake with the date earlier on, jumping 100 years ahead, but the people that died in the First World War, they've really only been recognised in the past couple of years, haven't they?
They were kind of airbrushed from history for a long time, but a lot more people died from the First World War than died from the Rising or the War of Independence or the Civil War. Mm-hmm. The huge, more of a personal impact on people's lives than the Revolutionary Wars as such. Mm-hmm. But it is under only... And as you said earlier on, that, you know, it's most people probably didn't enlist because of ideological reasons. They did so because of money. It was a very well paid job, and their family would be looked after. If anything happens to them. So that would would be the primary reason why most people joined the war effort.
I just watched recently. I was only thinking of you. I watched a program on the TV, and it featured the First World War. One guy from out here, I think, it was Portmarnock, and he became an officer, but he died very young out there. But they found a ream of letters that he'd written home to his mother, and how telling they were about what was happening over there, partially about what was happening over here as well. It was quite extraordinary. That's what I was saying about they're only getting the recognition there today.
Yeah, but can you imagine how they felt that, you know, they'd given all this effort for the war, they would have, you know, some of them would have been there for 4 years, and they come back and no one wants to know them. You know, they were like, all the Sinn Féin volunteers, or people who fought in the Rising, became heroes, you know, were cheered everywhere they went. No cheering for returning soldiers or people going off to the front.
I suppose you could like it too. A lot of the Americans coming back from Vietnam, what happened to them as well when the people went against the war in Vietnam, and a lot of soldiers came back. They were. Okay, the thing I didn't know about now, and just show me ignorance here, that the conscription crisis of 1918, I didn't know that there was talk of that at the time.
Yes, yeah, so because the war is becoming less and less popular, less people were volunteering for the war effort. Now, any Irish person who went to fight in World War One did so on a voluntary basis, but the numbers were down. Russia had left the war with the Bolsheviks coming to power, the Russian Revolution. So Germany didn't have to fight in two fronts anymore. They could concentrate all of their effort on the Western Front. So they started an offensive in March 1918, and they were pushing the French and the British back. So the British needed more conscripts. You know, America joined the war in April 1917, but the impact of their entry hadn't been realised yet. So there was an urgent need, you know, in Lloyd George's, you know, the British Prime Minister's mind, to get conscripts from Ireland. So he put out an act in the Parliament, and it was a bad idea from the start. Everyone said, look, you're actually declaring war on Ireland, this is not going to go down well. And it was a huge protest. It was a really successful protest. It was successful, in fact, not a drop of blood was spilt. And the British had to push back. They didn't get the conscripts they wanted, you know. They wanted 200,000 Irish people, Irish men. They wanted every Irish man from 18 to 50 to enlist for the war. And it didn't happen. Now, what it did do, though, was actually it helped Sinn Féin again, because all main Irish bodies were against it, with the possible exception of unionists. But you had the Irish Party against it, you had Sinn Féin against it, you had the trade unions against it, you had the Catholic Church against it, and they were all involved in this kind of cross-party support against conscription. But the British government, in their wisdom, decided to create a German plot, said that Sinn Féin were in league with the Germans. So they arrested over 70 members, senior members of Sinn Féin, including De Valera, W.T. Cosgrave, Countess Markovics. And this is what Sinn Féin... And Sinn Féin knew this was going to happen because of their intelligence network in the, you know, Dublin Castle. Michael Collins knew that they were going to be arrested. He decided to stay out, that he wasn't going to be arrested. He felt he was better outside. Most of the rest of them felt it would actually be good politically be arrested.
Okay.
So they were arrested, and it was a huge swell of support for Sinn Féin. Okay. Now the Irish Party supported the campaign against conscription, but because none of them were arrested, they were left in incriminating liberty. People thought they were conscriptionists.
Okay.
And Sinn Féin used that against them as well in by-elections.
And was there any truth to the fact that there was liaison?
No, there's no proof at all.
No proof.
It's just that invented. Obviously, there was some German involvement arising, but there was no proof that they were involved in the plot. That's never been found. It was just a way of just rounding up Sinn Féin leaders.
Okay, and then in 1918, they won again 3 to 4 of the seats, and Home Rule were decimated.
Yeah, so the general election, it was the first general election since 1910. So, you know, over 8 years. And it was a very changed electorate as well. Like, the Irish electorate went from 700,000 people to 1.93 million. Women were given the vote for the first time. Women over 30 were given the vote. A lot more men were given the vote as well. So it was a very different demographic to what it was in 1910. The Irish Party had been very complacent as well. You know, they'd been in power, you know, pretty much since the 1870s, 1880s. Most of the time, they never had to contest a seat. They didn't have to show up. They never had to do anything for their constituents. They were always elected unopposed. So it was, that's one of the reasons why the Irish Party did so bad. But there was a complete move towards Sinn Féin, you know, and that was building up towards 1917-1918, and there was this great momentum they had. So yeah, the Irish Party were decimated, and Sinn Féin won 3/4 of the seats, mm-hmm. with only 47% of the vote. Now, that's a bit unfair on Sinn Féin, because there was 25 seats uncontested the day one. If they were contested, the percentage would have been a lot higher than 47%.
Okay, it's fascinating, the whole thing of it. And just to recommend that people go to any of these talks in the libraries over the next couple of weeks. Will there be a Q&A at them as well, that people like
absolutely. And there's been a lot of great questions so far. Due to talks I've given this week. So yeah, absolutely. There's the talk itself usually lasts for about 40-45 minutes, and then, you know, people can ask questions for as long as they want. So.
Okay, and is it recommended that people maybe book and let you know?
Yeah, they do need to book. Yeah, they're just okay. It's free, but you just need to register at the library, whichever one you want to go to.
Okay, and much notice would you give? I mean, the next one is next Monday.
Yeah, you don't have to. You can turn up in the day if you want and just register. Yeah. But it's a there's no notice needed at all.
And the people that are going, is it across the board in age? Like, is it young and old?
It's a combination of old and young, you know.
I think a lot of young people are getting more interested in the history than ever before, aren't they?
Absolutely. Well, I think we all saw it from last year, you know, there was such a great interest.
Well, I'm a perfect example of someone that should know the history. I don't.
But last year was brilliant, you know, and it just showed a huge uptake of interest in the 16 Rising, and long maintain. And obviously we've got a whole decade of commemorations, you know. We have to talk about obviously the War of Independence, the partition, which mm-hmm. is, you know, the biggest legacy issue of all of this, mm-hmm. the Civil War, which, you know, in so many ways has been airbrushed as well, because it's a bit of an uncomfortable history, but it has to be looked at as well.
Okay, and just to say as well that of course a lot of people, as I said, interested in this. Is there anything? I mean, you're a historian and you get involved in all these things, and you probably have some idea of what's happened, and then you get to learn. Is there anything in the history of what we've just talked about, for instance, that surprised you? And you said, "Wow!" I mean, like I was surprised about conscription. Was there anything that surprised you at all?
Yeah, well, I suppose the one thing that everyone assumed that, you know, when Sinn Féin won these by-elections, 1917, that was just constant momentum towards them. But it wasn't as easy as that. Like, the Irish Party actually won 3 by-elections in a row in 1918. So, you know, it wasn't as clear-cut as, you know, Sinn Féin became this dominant political force mm-hmm. and happened overnight. It was a kind of a slow process, you know. And there's a number of interventions from the British government that actually helped Sinn Féin and destroyed the Irish Party. So, like, in early 1918, like, the Irish Party defeated Sinn Féin in 3 by-elections, you know, and that was that's probably overlooked in some regards. Okay. And it was the conscription crisis and the German plot arrests swung it back again towards Sinn Féin, you know.
I don't know much about a lot of the history, but I do know that the British have an awful habit of shooting themselves in the foot.
They did exactly the same as they did in 1916 afterwards, you know.
Yes.
And the War of Independence, you know, there, which we'll talk more about, you know, in a few weeks' time, you know, it was more their acts against the general population that really turned people against the British, you know, and they kept on making the same mistake over and over again.
Okay.
Irish policy.
Well, you're covering the whole area of Raheny, Coolock, Merino, and Donaghmede, and just remind people that it's in Raheny Library next Monday, the 19th, and then the following Monday, the 26th, at 6:30. Coolock Library on the 20th and the 27th at 6:30. Merino Library on the 21st and the 28th at 6:30. And Donaghmede Library on the 22nd and the 29th. So there's 2 sessions in each library to go, and I'll be talking to you again, I suppose, in about 2 weeks' time.
Great.
Okay, Cormac, anything else you want to get out there about the lectures coming up on the next Monday?
No, just if you register, they're free to attend, so the more people come, the merrier. You know?
Okay, like myself, I think you've whet a lot of people's appetite, and thank you very much for that.
Thanks, Noel.